What's up, babe?
Let's roll. You ready to roll, buddy McGirt?
I'm ready.
What's going on, champ? I appreciate you doing this. Does that ever get old, being called champ?
Nah, not at all, nah.
I do appreciate you coming on. I've been harassing your son for a few years to set this up. So I guess me harassing him year after year, I finally wore him down and linked this up, man. So thank you for doing this.
No problem.
We chatted the other day. You told me you were in London. What were you doing out there? I know boxing takes you all over the world traveling. What were you doing out in London?
I had a guy fight a week ago. He won.
Okay.
And now I'm back in the States, and I'm in Texas right now training Frank Martin. Ooh. He's fighting December 6th in San Antonio.
Oof. You just go place to place training people. What about this? Best food out in London that they don't have in Florida. You get to London, you're like, I'm finally in London. I get to eat what? What food are you ever looking forward to out there?
I can't say, man.
Nothing out there good?
I love Italian food.
Okay.
So like when I'm in Liverpool, they have some great Italian restaurants there in Liverpool.
You're London down to Texas. What do you miss the most right now, not being in Florida? I'm up in Brooklyn, New York. It's ice cold up here. It's like 25 degrees right now, so that's horrible. What do you miss the most about not being home in Florida?
Honestly, my house, just being home, man.
You shower in your bed, right?
Exactly. You know, last night here in Texas was 40.
Oh, it's not supposed to be that cold down in Texas.
Man, it's 50 degrees today. I had to go buy a coat yesterday, man.
You weren't always a Florida dude. Famously grew up in Brentwood, Long Island. Are you the most famous cat from Brentwood?
I don't know. You know what I mean? It depends on who you ask.
Who else is from there? I know Bismarck Key's from there, right?
Yeah, Bismarck Key's from there. EPMD's from there.
Oh.
Mitch Kupchak.
Oh, is it? Okay. So you're up there, though. You're on the Mount Rushmore of Brentmore people, right?
Yes.
Everyone knows Little Bud started boxing at the age of 12. It's super famous. Any other sports growing up? Were you any other sports? Because boxing's a weird sport, yeah, to start with.
I played Little League football for the BYA.
Were you good?
Yeah, I was good. I was cornerback, but they had a problem finding a helmet fit in my head.
Did they really?
Yeah. I mean, I got a big fucking head, and on top of having a big head, I had an afro. I used to get headaches when I made tackles. Sometimes I had to take off my headgear my helmet for a couple seconds.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, my face mask was so close to my face, man, that if you grabbed it, you'd poke my fucking eyes out.
No shit. Champ, I always feel it's so easy now to go on YouTube and mimic the style of boxing you like. Like, oh, I like the way that guy does it. I like the way he blocks, he punches. Back when you started, you couldn't sign to YouTube and find a quick clip. Who'd you look up to and what boxes did you mimic by and whatever reason? Was it Ring Magazine? How'd you get into stances and stuff?
I should try to mimic guys in the gym, right?
Okay.
The motherfuckers were getting hit too much. I said, this shit ain't going to work for me. And then I used to read a lot of magazines. You know, I used to read boxing magazines every day.
Okay.
Every day. And boxing books. And then I just used to, go in my basement at home, and I take a pillowcase and hang it up from the ceiling in the basement and just emulate styles, man. And then I watch fights every weekend and I'd emulate styles until, you know, and then one day I just said, you know, but everybody trying to fight, like sometimes it works, sometimes it don't. So how about just taking a little bit from each guy? You know what I mean? And that's what I did. You know, it was a learning process, but basically I had to put it with what I did best as well. But that's what made it fun for me.
Yeah, taking stuff and developing like the perfect boxer by taking a little bit from, wow, that's pretty interesting. Now, let me ask you this one, champ. Brentwood had a reputation back in the day of being like a little hard, especially when you were growing up. How'd you stay away from the nonsense and like just focus on yourself and the sweet science and not go down the wrong path? Was that easy to do? Did you have a lot of mentors and stuff?
You know, I got to honestly say this. I had my brother, he's deceased now, but my brother was always in the streets.
Okay.
So everybody knew my brother. My mother and father were separated, but everyone knew my dad. So back when I was a kid in my neighborhood, if you were somewhere you had no business, somebody would tell you to go home. But I want to say this, though. The old heads in Brentwood, the pimps, drug dealers, the fighters, the killers, whatever. Mm-hmm. I got to honestly say I owe them a lot. And because sometimes I'd be out hanging out. There's a store in my neighborhood. It's called the La Placita.
Okay.
It's still there. To me personally, I think that place should be a landmark.
Okay.
Because at the La Placita, everybody and their mother hung out in front of the La Placita. You know what I mean? Whether from the drug dealers on down, uh-huh. the wannabe drug dealers, the wannabe hard guys, you know, all the women, everybody hung out in front of the Placita. It could be fucking 10 below outside. Somebody was in front of the fucking Placita. You know what I mean? So, and I used to hang out there. Well, I used to try to hang out there.
Okay.
Especially in the summertime. You know what I mean? Maybe riding bikes. You hanging out at the Placita in the parking lot. And once it started getting dark, some of the guys would say, McGirt. I'd be like, yeah. They said, get out of here. They'd make me leave.
No shit. Really?
Yeah. They said, get out of here. You don't belong here. He says, you got a future ahead of you. So get your ass off this corner before I tell your father or your brother.
Wow.
So I would leave, you know, out of respect, you know. And I thanked them. I really, really, from the bottom of my heart, thanked them. You know, I'll never forget it, you know, because as I got older, I realized these guys were saving me from the streets. You know what I mean? And then sometimes, like, I'd be in Central Iceland up in the park or wine dance in the park.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'd be hanging out like, yeah, ain't nobody going to catch me here.
Yeah.
And sure enough, somebody fucking tapped me on the shoulder and be like, McGirt. I'd be like, God damn, man.
How
I'm
did
like,
you find me?
I'm like, what are you doing? They said, yo, man, get your ass out of here, man. Wow, you don't belong here.
That's wild.
Yeah. I thank those old guys, man.
Of course.
Sometimes I get emotional because they saved my life, bro.
Without
they saved my life, man. Yeah, they really, really did. And then there was like some of my friends' parents. I mean, there's one man, his name was Charlie Moore. Mr. Moore would watch boxing with me every weekend. I mean, he said, come on over, bud, and we watch the fights. And me and Mr. Moore watched the fights every week. His son, who was my dear friend, they'd be out hanging out.
No.
They didn't want to watch the boxing. Me and Mr. Moore would sit there and watch the fights every weekend. And then when Mr. Moore got fucking HBO, I was definitely out of sight.
Yeah, definitely. You know, that gives you chills. Like, they saw something in you and made sure you were going to make something of yourself. They really looked out for you.
Yeah, they really did, man. I really owe a lot to them, man, because them old heads. Mm-hmm. I mean, if I be in the car with the wrong person, they say, McGirt, what are you doing, man? I said, man, get your ass out that car.
Wow.
And I respected them. I respected them, and I would get out. I mean, I'd be like, shit. I'd be saying to myself, fuck, man. And they're like, you know what I mean? But, hey, you know, I honestly say, you know, those guys really saved me, man. You know, sometimes they, like, when I was old enough to get into a club, we had a club in Brentwood called Nicety's.
Okay.
You know? And if I, you know, sometimes I sneak into the club, and I have a soda in my hand. The bouncers would walk up and grab it and smell it to see if there was alcohol in it.
Wow. Now, I mean, were you boxing at this time, or you were still like a little prodigy?
I was boxing. I was 17. I was 18. I just turned pro. And if they saw me, even when I was young, if they saw me drinking a soda in the park, they'd come up and grab the soda and smell it.
I love it.
They'd be like, little McGirt, man. I said, look, man, it's soda, man. You know what the fuck? You know? Goddamn. But as I got older, I realized these guys were saving me from the streets, man, and I thanked them.
You said you were boxing back then. You turned pro. Your workload when you first came out in like the early 80s, 82, 83, it was bananas. You had like 20-something fights in 3 years. Was that by design? Were you taking any fight? Were you trying to get ring time?
I wasn't taking any fight.
Okay. But
my managers, you know, I had old school managers.
Okay.
And they believe that you got to sharpen your craft. You got to stay busy. So. I mean, and, you know, they was paying my – I used to travel now from Brentwood, Long Island, mm-hmm. to Jersey City, New Jersey every day.
Was that 2 hours?
Three.
Oof. Now, was that just for the love of boxing?
Yeah, well, that's where, you know, it's funny. When I turned pro, I was in high school.
Okay.
My first fight was March 2nd, 1982. It was a Tuesday night. I went to school that day. My manager picked me up after school, and we drove to New Jersey. And so he saw an old man who was worked the corner that night, and all of his fighters won except one, and that was the guy that fought me. It was a draw. So he said, I want that old man to train you. So long story short, 2 days later, he picked me up. Boom. We went to Jersey. The old man says, I'd love to train you. There's only one problem. I said, what? He goes, I'm not coming to New York. I'm too old. So my manager said, well, what do you suggest? He goes, I suggest when you get out of school, you jump on the train and you come here.
Oh, my God. That's dedication.
So I said, my eighth period teacher, Mr. Scott Immerdorf, I'll never forget him. He used to let me leave early to catch the train. No. I should catch the 1227 train. It should take me 3 hours to get to the gym, a train, then 3 hours back home. And then I would go to sleep, do my homework, go to sleep, get up at 5, run before I went to school. I did that my whole senior year.
Do you remember how much you got paid for your first fight?
$200.
No, was it really?
It was $200. $200. I remember that shit like it was yesterday. My second pro fight, I got $675.
Unreal.
It was the week before my prom. My second pro fight was the week before my prom.
And you're probably living it up with that $500 in your pocket.
No, $675, baby. $675. Get it? I mean, but, you know, I mean, so, you know, it was a struggle, but at the same time, it was a learning experience, you know? And like there was times, you know, like I get stuck in a snowstorm. It take me forever to fucking get home. Oof. I mean, one day I got stuck at the wine. We left Brentwood at I think it was 227 train.
Okay.
We left Brentwood, got to Wyandanch. The snow was so bad. We sat there to 8 o'clock at night, and then the train came back to Brentwood. Wyandanch is only two stops.
Oh, my God.
I sat in the fucking train for 5.5 hours.
Wow.
In the locomotive.
I love how you still just remember those small little details. I love that.
Hey, it was a learning experience.
Of course.
You know, it was a learning experience, man. And, you know, I used to have to stretch $20 to last me fucking a week sometimes, you know? Yeah, it was a bitch, man.
Well, it all paid off. You're undefeated. Yeah. You were 26-0, and you finally go fight on the undercard at the Garden. Tyson versus Mitch Green. You fought Ricky Young. How was it, a Long Island kid fighting at the Garden on a Tyson draw? How crazy was that for you?
It was like a great experience because I got to train with the Hilton brothers, and I used to spar Matthew Hilton, who was this motherfucker get hit, man. And he bruised my ribs 10 days before the fight.
Did he really? And you were 26-0.
After that, I had to take it because they paid me $7,500. So to me, that was a lot of money. So I'm like, bruised ribs. I said, bruised ribs, no ribs. I'm fucking fighting.
Champ, as a young fighter fighting on a Tyson card, do you hang around there and watch Kid Dynamite afterwards, or are you going out, the fight's over, you're done? Are you still a fan of boxing? Do you hang out after that? Do you watch Tyson fight?
You know what I did that night? After I fought, I came out, and I watched maybe 4 rounds of the fight.
Okay.
And then, you know, I was away in Jersey training. I wanted to go home, man. I said, yeah, fuck this, I'm going home, man. And this fight's going the distance. I said, this fight's going the distance. My ribs were killing me. And then I went home, you know.
I just finished, Mark Kriegel wrote a book about Tyson, and he mentioned you. He said you were in attendance when Mike was an amateur, and you and some other guys were talking about him. Did you see something early on in him? He said that you said early on you knew this kid was going to be special. Is that true?
Mike Tyson was 16.
Okay. Oh, wow. I love your knowledge.
We was in Grossinger's.
Okay.
I was sparring with Mustafa Hampshire. And Mike Tyson was there boxing Mitch Green. I mean, not Mitch Green, Frank Bruno. And my manager says we could be looking at the future of the heavyweight division. He was kicking Frank Bruno's ass every day at 16 years old.
Holy shit.
I mean, he was kicking his ass.
Oh, my God.
I said, this motherfucker is no joke. He was a fucking killer, man. He was quiet. He was with Kevin Rooney. Mm-hmm. They always sat alone. They didn't talk to nobody. But when they got in there, man, goddamn, it was hell. He was just special, man. You know, I mean, Mike was special. You know, and I told Mike one day, I said, "What Customato did with you, he could never do with another fighter."
And why is that?
Because he was just that special one that, you know, you get that special car, and you can take that car and you can mold it to where you want it. You know, he had other fighters. You know, he had Jose Torres, Floyd Patterson. Mm-hmm. You know, Customato had a ton of fighters. But it's always just that one. And they clicked. And he did miracles with him. I mean, and Mike was, hey, man, the shit Mike did, to some people, like, oh, that shit ain't going to work. It ain't going to work for you, but it works for him. You know what I mean? You know, and Mike just had that fire, man. You know, Mike, you know what I mean? When I'm telling you, Michael Spinks, everybody. We used to eat dinner fast to come down to watch fucking Tyson spar Frank Bruno.
Holy shit.
He was 16 years old, man. Kicking his ass.
That Tyson card, champ, did that put you on the map? Did that kind of put your name out there? Locally, people knew who you are. Or was it when you kind of went up a little bit?
It kind of put me out there because even though I didn't fight on HBO,
yeah,
I fought a tough kid from New York, you know what I mean, Ricky Young, and they have been trying to put the fight with me and Ricky Young together for a couple of years. So then we finally got it, and I think just everyone being there for Tyson, a lot of people got a chance to see me, you know what I mean? So that helped, you know what I mean, because, you know, the people from HBO were there. Mm-hmm. So they got to see me, even though it took 7 years before I fought on HBO. But
which is bonkers. That's absolute bananas.
I mean, but it is what it is, man. You know, I mean, so it was just great just to be a part of that card for sure. You know, at the press conference, Mitch Green taking off his shirt, calling Mike Tyson, Cicely Tyson, you know what I mean? I was like, this motherfucker's crazy. But then I wound up becoming good friends with Mitch Green.
You know what I mean? When you look at your career of boxing, it's always fascinating to me because soon after that, you take your first loss against Frank Warren. Boxing's a lonely sport. Mentally, how'd you deal with that? Because you were invincible. You were undefeated. How do you cope with your first loss?
You want to know how I dealt with it?
Yeah.
Fight's over.
Mm-hmm.
We're in the dressing room. And we get dressed and we walk outside. And my manager says, come on, the limo's here. I said, I'm not taking the limo. He's like, what? I said, I'm going to walk back to the hotel. He goes, okay, we go with you. I said, I don't want nobody to go with me. I'm going to go by myself. And I walked. It was about a mile. I walked mm-hmm. by myself. I walked. I mean, when I got to the hotel, my manager was standing outside waiting for me. And my brothers and everybody, my mom. I walked up to my manager. I said, get me a fight. And he's like, what? I said, get me a fight. I said, I'm going to go home, take off a week or two, get me a fight. And he was like, but kid, you just lost. Get me a fight. I'm not going to be able to sleep until I can erase that loss. And I fought, that was in July. I fought in September. I fought Saul Manby, who was a former world champion. And I fought 2 months later.
Yeah, and it's always so weird because you had to fight like 8 times after that loss to finally get your rematch. You win the welterweight title in Texas, knocking him out. How does a young Buddy McGirt celebrate getting to the mountaintop, winning the title, which is the dream when you throw your first jab? How do you celebrate winning the title in Texas?
Well, to be honest, I was in the fight. I was in such a zone that it took me a couple of days to come down. I can't explain it.
Okay. So it didn't sink in.
But like, in the fight, like, sometimes when you get in certain situations that mentally you got to go, like, to another level. I mean, and mentally I had to go to another level because this motherfucker was in my ass. Like, he wasn't giving a brother no chance to breathe. And I knew that I was in the fight of my life. So I freaking mentally just went there. I went to the next level. And when I came, you know, I got out the ring and everything was good, but mentally I was just like, I wasn't there. I'd go home and I'd be talking to people, but I mean, my mind just, it took a couple of days for it to, you know, be like, yo, motherfucker, you world champion. You know what I mean? On the plane ride going home.
Yeah.
I had my belt on the plane. My ears were swollen, and that's, everyone was talking to me, but I was there, but I wasn't there. And like physically, my body was drained, like drained. And then mentally, I was just so tired, man. It took me, wow, to recover from that, I would say 2 months.
And then you took fights pretty quickly. You know, you lose to Taylor, and then it takes you 3 years moving up in weight class out in Nevada, 91. You are a huge underdog. I didn't realize you were like a 9 or 10 to 1 underdog against Simon Brown.
10 to 1.
10 to 1. You win that one. Did you at least appreciate that one? Because it seems the first one you won it.
I enjoyed that one more.
And how'd you celebrate that one out in Vegas?
Well, you know, nothing. Be honest with you, I went back to the room with my girl and chill. She's not my wife. But, you know, I mean, after the fight, everyone was downstairs partying. I didn't drink. I was tired. I just wanted to go rest. So I went up. I took a hot bath. And I stayed in the room till the next morning. It was time for my flight to leave.
Wow. Where are the belts? Where are the belts displayed now?
Well, they were at my mom's. You know, okay. Me and my wife, it was funny. As we were falling asleep, it was time to get up, to leave, to go home. But the belts were at my mom. And my mom passed away a few years ago, so now they're in my house. But when I moved to Florida and I was taking my stuff, my mother said, you're not taking those fucking belts.
Mom wanted those belts.
I mean, I said, no, Mom, I'm not. She goes, okay, as long as you know, you're not taking them. So when I moved, she kept them. I mean, until she passed. Then when she passed, I went and got them out the house.
It's so crazy. Mm-hmm. You were known for a guy to take all these fights. You had so many injuries, and you wish you could have, you know, maybe recovered more, but you kept fighting and fighting. It's crazy how long your career went on after that. Legendary fights. Obviously, the Sweet Pea Whitaker ones is when you really came on my radar, and my dad would tell me about you from 10 years earlier. Over 5,500 days since your first fight and your last one, the legendary Buddy McGirt. When did you know it was time to hang up the gloves?
After I fought a guy named Pat Coleman.
Okay.
Before the second Whitaker fight.
Okay.
And I was in the dressing room, me and my wife, and my manager came and said, you got the rematch with Pennell. When he said that, it was like someone let the air out of a balloon. Like everything just left my body. Like I started crying. And my wife's like, why are you crying?
Yeah, you got the rematch.
Nah, I wasn't crying for that. I said, I don't want to fight anymore.
Oh, you didn't have it in you anymore. It was done. You fought it for 5,500 days since your first fight. Jesus.
That was it. That was that day right there. I said, I don't want to fight no more. And she said, my wife said, okay, if you don't want to, you don't have to. I mean, and I went home. And I was like, I don't want to do it. And then, you know, I had a bunch of fucking bills, you know what I mean? I had a lot of bills to pay.
Of course.
And the only way I was going to pay them bills is by fighting. Because, you know, it was, you know, you never prepare for that day. When it's over, you never prepare for it. So I wasn't prepared for it. So when I went home and I looked at my bills, and I looked how much money I didn't save. I'm like, fuck, I got to fight. You know what I mean? And my wife said, so what are you going to do? I said, well, I can use that $300,000.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I can't walk away from it. But the whole training camp, it just wasn't there anymore. It was gone. And, you know, my wife used to call me every day. She was worried about me. But I said, I'm going to be okay. I mean, but the fight was gone. The fight was gone. And so from that day on, I just went through the motions. You know what I mean? I knew I could beat guys with my experience and my know-how. You know what I mean? But when I fought him the second time, I said, I got to go out and try to get him out early. Because I know physically and even mentally, I was not ready to go 12 rounds. You know what I mean? It just wasn't there, man. You know, you're doing it because you have to do it, not because you want to do it.
And that's scary. That's when you can get hurt.
Exactly.
Now,
after the fight, my wife says, "So what are you going to do?" I said, "I got to continue to push along. You know, what else am I going to do? I didn't prepare for life after boxing. You know what I mean? And I'm helping family, I'm helping everybody. But now when I look at the bank account, there's nothing in there. It's gone.
And no one's helping you. That's when the phone gets very quiet.
No one's helping me. You know what I mean? I said, now everyone's laughing at me now. And then I retired in 95, and then I was training guys.
So the love of boxing, but champ, the love of boxing was still there, just not the fighting aspect of it, but you still love the sport, correct, right?
I've always loved the sport, but the actual aspect to fight again was gone. It left me August of 94. I'll never forget. And so when I finally retired for good, I was in Colorado Springs training for a fight. And I was jogging around the lake in Colorado Springs, and I looked at my clock, at my watch. It was 8 o'clock in the morning. Now, normally, at 8 o'clock in the morning, Buddy McGirt was at breakfast.
Okay.
Road work was done, and I was at breakfast. It is 8 o'clock. I'm just starting my road work.
Mm-hmm.
So I stopped running, and my friend was like, "Yo, what the fuck you doing?" I said, "I'm going home." I said, "What do you mean you're going home?" I said, "That's it. I'm done." And he goes, "Yo, man, you fucking crazy. You got $50,000 on the table." I said, "Yo, dog." I said, "Listen, it's 8 o'clock in the morning. I'm just starting my run. Normally, I'm at breakfast. Who the fuck am I kidding? The thrill is gone, man." So it was the hardest decision of my life, I got to honestly tell you. Because it came at a time where I knew I couldn't do what I love anymore. And all the money I had made was gone.
Oh,
I mean, so I went back to the apartment and I said, "Listen, you guys coming with me?" They said, "Nah, you'll be back." I said, "I'm telling you right now, I'm leaving. I left my clothes. I left my trainers. I left everything." I called my wife. I said, "I'm coming home." And she said, "Thank God."
Wow.
But I got to honestly say that it was the longest plane ride of my life.
Mentally, all you're doing is thinking now that chapter's over. The new chapter in Buddy McGirt's life is here now, right?
I'm like, okay, who owes me money and how can I get it back?
Wow.
That's what I'm thinking flying home on the plane. It's like, I got to take care of my kids. You know what I'm saying? I got to pay the bills. So I'm like, I got to figure this shit out before, you know. So I flew home. Then on the way home from the airport, It was a quiet ride home. I mean, and it was a quiet ride home, and I got home. I stayed up all night. I'm like, I got to figure this out, man. I got to figure this out. And it took me a few days, but I figured it out, you know. And the person who was holding the mortgage on my house was an old lady. God bless her. She's not here. I called her up and I explained to her my situation. And she goes, "James," she goes, "you've been great. You've always paid your mortgage on time." She goes, "I understand we all come across hard times." She says, "I give you a year."
What a saint.
She goes, "I give you a year to get back situated." She goes, "Just please do me one favor." I said, "What's that?" She goes, "Just pay the property tax for a year," which is $3,000.
Okay.
So she goes, "If you could pay it for the year," she goes, "that's all I ask. You don't got to pay the mortgage for a year." She goes, "You know, take that money, save it, and do what you have to do." I mean, I said, "Thank you so much." And that was one relief. And then I decided, I had like 5 cars.
Mm-hmm.
So I got rid of all my cars and I let my wife keep one.
Okay.
And I had a motorcycle, so I kept the motorcycle. And I rode my motorcycle for like 6-7 months, man. And I was training fighters, and you know, my wife had a car to get to work and get the kids to school and everything like that. So it was a struggle. You know, I wouldn't go to my family
mm-hmm.
for help because that's what they wanted.
Yeah.
I mean, so they can laugh about it and talk about it. But I was like, I'll sell my ass on the freeway before I fucking ask you people for any motherfucking thing. I might not get much money for selling my ass, but I said, I'll sell my ass before I ask you for shit. I mean, and that's what I did. And then, you know, I was training and training, and then I started working for Don King.
Well, I want to ask you about the training part, because you were one of the elites, and so many elite athletes and boxers have a difficulty time converting into being a trainer, a coach, a manager. Because they want their students to want it as much as they do. Like you said, you would dedicate 3 hours a day on the train from Long Island. You want your boxers to do the same. Was that hard? Was that an issue for you, like to want to have these people want it as much as you?
It wasn't about that.
Oh.
It wasn't about that. It was hard still. Mm-hmm. Because when you're trying to teach them something and they're not grasping it, you got to put in your mind and understand you didn't grasp it overnight either.
You know what I mean? You might know it now, but yeah.
So, but the funny thing is, when I was fighting pro, I was training amateurs in my spare time.
Yeah, I read that about you. You were double dipping, basically. That's how much you loved it.
Yeah, I was preparing myself. And believe it or not, training the amateurs helped make me a better fighter.
But brought you back to the roots.
Yeah, so I it was a big adjustment. I got honestly say it was one of the, behind retiring and doing that was very hard, because sometimes you get managers that think they know what the fuck they're doing. Mm-hmm. They don't. And you sit back, you can't say anything, and you're watching them fuck the fighter over, but you can't say anything. Then you get the managers to try to fuck you over, like they know more than you. And I'm saying to myself, yo, motherfucker, what I forgot, you haven't learned. So don't even try it. You know what I mean? So it was just so much you see. And, you know, I've learned from being around my crazy ass manager, you know what I mean, how the shit goes. And these motherfuckers are treacherous, man. So, but I never would go back and tell the fighter, oh, your manager's doing this or your manager's. I would never do that. And I never crossed that line. But sometimes, you know, you know, there were some managers I had to put in their place, like, yo, you're not going to fuck me over, dog.
No shit, really?
So, you know. Oh yeah, so you know it was hard, but you know it, at the same time it was a learning process, and you know, and you just gotta now you gotta build yourself in another area of the sport.
What makes you decide if you're gonna train a boxer? Obviously, many have came to you, champ Buddy McGirt, legend. What makes you decide, like, hey, I'm gonna take a shot on this guy, or not just guys, Otora Gotti, Vernon Forrest, Sergey Kovalev, like these guys come to you. What makes you decide, you know what? Yeah, I'm going to take a flyer on this one. I'm going to help him out.
This is what I do with us. Is let's train a couple of days together first. Mm-hmm. Let's see if we vibe. Let's make sure we get along. We might get along outside the gym, but we might not get along inside the gym. So let's spend a couple of days together. And if we can click, you got it. And I was blessed and it clicked.
I remember the first time I heard of Buddy McGirt, the trainer. You're one of those names that it's not a, you know, common name, you know, Mike Smith. So my dad would always talk about you. My dad and grandfather talk about boxing. And, you know, obviously you being a Long Island guy, you would come up. And I remember when it was Roy Jones versus Antonio Tarver. And I'm like, Dad, Roy Jones can't lose. Like Roy Jones doesn't lose. That's just something he doesn't do. And my dad's like, you know, he's like, you don't know boxing. He's like, it's not just the boxer. He's like, Tarver's athletic. He goes, and he has Buddy McGirt in his corner. I'm like, what does that mean? What does he even train? But I remember after that, then the name would come up. And then, of course, my dad would give me shit all the time. What do you remember about that historic win? Because to me, that's when I really learned the name Buddy McGirt. I'm like, oh, my. Because you were everywhere for that. Like, you were. What do you remember the most about that? Because that was historic. And I think for me, on my level, my generation, that put you on the map of, like, these iconic trainers.
I told Antonio at the end of the first round, I said to myself, I got to get Antonio mad. Mm-hmm. He came back to the corner. I said, you're giving him too much respect. And he fucking lost it. He's like, man, don't say that in this corner. You don't use those words in this corner. I ain't giving him no damn respect. I said, then go get your respect. You know what I mean? I said, go get your respect. He said, give him my mouthpiece. And he went out there, knocked him out.
Like a monster. What do you do as a trainer with all the clothing and stuff? You train so many guys. What do you do to all the clothing you wear? Do you keep it?
Some of it I got in a box. Some of it I gave away. And some I have in boxes. I mean, and some people bought from me. You know what I mean? It's like, buddy, let me get. I'm like, nah, come on, man.
I bet people would want that, of course.
Oh, yeah. You know what I mean? But, you know, I still have a lot of boxes at my house.
You're a link to the past and the current world of boxing. You know, champion back in the day, training champions now. What's one piece of old school boxing wisdom that you wish today's boxers would have? Like, maybe today's boxers forgot. What kind of old school shit?
Stop, you know, guys, today, you know, a lot of these motherfuckers run on treadmills, man. You got to get outside and hit that road, baby.
You hate the treadmill running. I've watched interviews with you. You're like, run on the road. Stop with the treadmill bullshit. Run on the road. What is it
run
with
on the road,
that you love?
Man. Run on the road, especially in the wintertime. Get out there in that cold, man. And
feel it.
Listen. Yeah, man. Listen, one time, man, I never forget, 1983. I was getting ready for a fight and it was snowing. And I said, I got to run. And my mother worked nights and she called me. She said, do not take your ass outside to go run. I said, okay, Ma. As soon as I got off the phone, I took off running. So I'm running down Fifth Avenue in Brentwood. Mm-hmm. And I actually run past Entenmann's Bakery, you know. And the snow was hitting my back. So I was like, this ain't shit. But I forgot I got to turn around now. Oh, my God.
Whip it in
brutal.
Your face.
Ooh. And my friend, his father's family... I mean, my friend and his family, they used to plow the snow. Mm-hmm. They had a contract with the town. And they'd be stopping like, buddy, you sure you don't want to ride? I'm like, nah, man, I'm okay. I'm okay, man. I mean, my friend said, run in front of me, run, and I drive real slow. Because, you know, you couldn't see.
Wow.
Yeah, he goes, I drive real slow. But for like 2 miles, he held up traffic so I could run. You know what I mean?
Your historic career has been talked about and praised, but there's no more higher honor than to be inducted into a Hall of Fame, the International Boxing Hall of Fame. Tell me about that phone call. Where were you? How did you get it? And how do they tell you? The phone rings. Tell me about that phone call. It's like getting drafted. Give me that call.
I was coming from the store. I was home in Florida coming from the store, and I was taking the back roads home. And my phone rang. I looked, and I saw Ed Brophy. And they always call you right around Thanksgiving. He always called me around Thanksgiving to invite me to the Hall of Fame.
Okay.
So I'm looking at the phone. I'm like, hello? And he said, Buddy McGirt. I said, yeah, Ed. And he just started laughing. You know what I mean? When he started laughing, I knew what it was.
Wow.
Because every year around Thanksgiving, he calls me to ask me to come up and be a guest. You know what I mean? And he said, Buddy McGirt. I said, yeah. And he started laughing. He goes, I'm not asking you to be a guest this time.
Unbelievable.
And I said, what? And he said, you're in the Hall of Fame.
Wow.
And I went home, told my wife and kids, I started crying, you know, because it happened right after my mother died.
Oh.
And she always wanted to see me get inducted. That's all she talked about. So it was right after she died that he called me, you know, and she still would say, when the fuck they going to put you in that damn Hall of Fame, boy? I want to go up there. Oh. My mother was a riot, man. She was too much. God bless her, you know. She goes, you belong in that shit. She goes, you going every year as a goddamn guest. Fuck being a guest.
Your whole thing. So
but when she started getting dementia, I was always hoping that she would be around to see me get inducted. But unfortunately, she wasn't. She passed away, you know what I mean, before that could happen, you know. So... But, you know, she was there with me in spirit. So.
Hell yeah, looking down on you, of course.
Oh, yeah.
I want to ask you two urban legends, and let me know if either of them are true. Did Don King really save your life? Because you were never one of his fighters. And when you do a quick – right before when I was walking home today, I do a quick Google search, see if I can get any last-minute stuff about talking to you. And something about Don King saving your life. Is that a nonsense thing, or did he – what was that about?
That's 1,000% true, man. I got really sick. I was working for Don. I got really sick. And I was pissing blood. I mean, I was sweating. So Don King's, my friend called Don King's office. And my wife called my friend and was like, please, 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 I mean, get my we was in Florida. We were still living in New York at the time.
Okay.
We was in Florida training, and my wife called me like for 2 days, and she's like, "Why are you still in the bed?" I said, "I'm okay." She said, "Nah, something's not right." So she called my friend who was in the room next to me, and she goes, "Can you please take Bud to the hospital?" So we called Don King's office, and they told him, they said, "Buddy, go to the Cleveland Clinic." So I went to the Cleveland Clinic, and when I got to the Cleveland Clinic, they put the stethoscope on my heart, and the guy looked at me and go, where's your wife?" I said, "My wife's in New York." He goes, "I think you should get your wife here." I'm like, "What?" He goes, "Yes, sir." He goes, your AFib is out of control." So they did blood work on me, and then when they asked me to pee in a cup, it was red. They were like, "You're pissing blood, I was pissing blood." And I was fucked up. I mean, you know, and you know where it all stemmed from? My fucking thyroid. I had hyperthyroidism. It was they call it Graves' disease. But mine was bad. Like the doctor says, if you don't come in here today, you're not alive tomorrow. So they said, "Do you have insurance?" I said, "No, I work for Don King Productions." They said, "Well, look, this is going to be expensive." I mean, so we called the office. Don King said, "Pay for whatever buddy needs." And he told them people to give the doctors his fucking the credit card number from Don King Productions. And for 6 months, man, I had to keep going back and forth to the doctor for 6 months. He paid the fucking everything for 6 months.
What a saint. Oh, my God.
Yeah. And when I, you know, I had to take a radioactive iodine pill, which alone was like $2,500.
Disgusting.
And I had to take that twice. Don paid that. I had to go to the doctor for the first 2 weeks. I had to go to the doctor three times a week to see if the blood in my urine would clear up. Because the, you know, when I went to piss, that shit looked like ketchup. It was fucking, but my thyroid was going so crazy that the blood was getting into my kidneys.
That's horrifying.
Yeah, I was fucked up, man. Don paid every fucking thing. But within 10 days, the pee cleared up in my urine. I mean, the blood cleared up in my urine. And fucking, because I just sweat profusely because my thyroid was racing so much. And that stopped. And within 4 months, I put on 40, like 20 pounds. I was thin, man. I was really thin.
Yeah.
I mean, and I put my weight back on and I was like a new fucking person, man.
Don King, baby. Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, when I tell people, they're like, "Yeah, right. Did you have to pay him back?" I'm like, "No. I didn't have to pay him back." And then when I moved to Florida, he paid for me to move to Florida.
No shit, really?
Yeah. He said, "How much you need?" I said, $20,000. I didn't need
$20,000. Yeah.
I told him I needed $20,000. He told him, "Cut buddy a check."
And you know what I mean? The second story, urban legend or not, is it true you used to have dinner with John Gotti and Sammy the Bull? Is that bullshit or you used to hang out with those guys?
That's true.
How did that come about? Like, how did Buddy McGirt, the boxer Brentwood champion, hang out with Gotti and Sammy the Bull?
They were John Gotti was good friends with my manager, Stewie. They grew up together.
Okay.
And Sammy the Bull used to train in Gleason's gym with me with Hector Roca.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah. So, but I met him through John Gotti. And then one day when we was at dinner with John Gotti, I'm looking at him. He's looking at me. He goes, "You don't remember me, do you?" I'm like, "No." He goes, "You see me every fucking morning in the gym."
You didn't put two and two together.
I said, "You don't even got a fucking suit on in the gym." He started laughing. But, you know, they used to come to my fights.
Oh, and that's wild.
In 1992, 93, I had to go before the fucking Senate in Washington, D.C.
Because of your relationship with them?
Yeah, they tried to say I had mob ties.
Buddy the Mobster, that's great.
Yeah, so they fucking took me in a little room with all these pictures of all these mobsters. I'm looking around. I said, can you tell me why I'm here? And they said, "Does any of these people look familiar?" I said, "Fuck no."
Holy shit.
They said, "Yeah, well, you know, we know that your managers are friends with John Gotti. And, you know, we want to know if you have any mob ties." So my exact words to the guy was, I said, "Sir, how many black people do you see in the mob?" They said, "None." I said, so why are you fucking with me? Like, really, why are you fucking with me, dog? Okay, I had dinner with the guy.
Oh, that's great.
I said, I had dinner with the guy a few times. Okay, so what's wrong with that? I said, if I have dinner with you, does that make me a politician? They said, no. I said, okay, so tell me, what is the problem? Well, would you ever ask to throw a fight? No. I said, you guys watch too much TV, man.
Too much TV, man. The box is going to take a dive for the mob.
The feds, no lie. This is no bullshit. Mm-hmm. The feds used to come to the gym and watch me train. And they said to me, Mr. McGirt, they said, have you ever been asked to throw a fight? I was like, no. So they said, okay, you sure? I'm like, I said, sir. They said, the black man and the black woman, I'll never forget. I said, listen, man, why are you guys doing this? I mean, I said, why? You know what I mean? They're like, well, you know, they're saying that you got mob ties. I'm like, come on, man.
Mob ties. Really?
I'm like, come on, bro. I said, well, you know, you went to dinner. I'm like, so fucking what? Now, when I was in D.C. before the Senate, they had a picture of me at dinner with John Gotti. My daughter was in a fucking, I had my daughter was like 2 years old.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So they said, well, what did you learn this night? I said, I learned that they eat in good restaurants.
They eat fine restaurants.
So they fucking got mad at me. They go, this is not a time for jokes. I'm like, what the fuck you want me to tell you? I said, you really think they're going to discuss their business with me? And my two-year-old daughter, I'm like, come on, man. Like, what's wrong with you motherfuckers, man? Wow. Yeah, man. I'm like, I said, yeah. I can't deny it because, shit, you got
pictures of you.
And then after I beat Simon Brown, they had a party for me in Bensonhurst, not in Bensonhurst, in Queens, Woodland Boulevard.
Okay.
And they said to me, well, did you know he was charging $200 at the door? I said, he ain't charged me $200 motherfucking dollars. I don't know about anybody else, but Buddy McGirt ain't paid $200 to get in that motherfucking party. So I don't know what the fuck to tell you.
Every interview you do is, of course, of your time in the ring and boxing. You're a grandfather now. Do you have granddaughters? They play a bunch of sports too, right?
Yes, I have grandkids, and they play soccer like my daughters.
I went on your Instagram and I saw it. Did you become a soccer fan now because of them?
I got no choice, man. My two daughters, they're grown now, but since they were like 5 or 6 years old, every fucking weekend, soccer. And then they have these tournaments. You got to go to fucking Disney on Father's Day. I'm like, whoever fucking playing these tournaments don't have a life. You know what I mean? Sunday, Father's Day, you're out there at Disney all day at soccer tournaments. Oh, but to pay it off, you know, my one daughter, two of my daughters played in college.
Okay.
That's scholarships, full scholarships. One is playing professional soccer now in Israel.
Oh, wow.
And one is playing for St. Leo University in Tampa.
Congratulations, man.
Thank you. So, you know, it paid off. But every fucking weekend was a soccer tournament. Especially Disney. I said, whoever's making these schedules, you have one game by 9 in the morning, right? You're done by 10. Next game's not to 2 o'clock. What the fuck? We're going to do it in 2? I'm like, whoever made these schedules don't have a life.
They're losers.
It must be one miserable motherfucker, man.
Champ, I've had you for 50 minutes. Are you ready to finish up with some quick hit questions?
Go ahead.
Last person you asked to take a picture with. Everyone always wants to take pictures with the champ, Buddy McGirt. Who's the last person you asked to take a picture with?
You mean fighter-wise?
Anyone. Any celebrity or fighter that you like, hey, can I get a picture with you?
Celebrity, okay.
Yep.
The last person I asked to take a picture with was with Chris Rock's brother. What's his name? Oh, shit.
Tony Rock?
Yeah. I saw him at a wedding a couple months ago. And he's a boxing fanatic.
Oh, really? Really?
Yeah. Oh, my God. He came right over to me at the table, and we was debating right out the fucking gate. We was going at it, Jack.
How about this? Coolest person in your phone. If Buddy McGirt wants to impress everyone at a party, who can you text that would text you back?
Mike Epps.
Oof, that's a good answer. How about this? One fight in history, because you're a boxing encyclopedia historian, one fight in history you wish you could have sat front row to watch?
Thrill in Manila.
Oof. That's amazing. How about this? Coolest piece of memorabilia that you own?
Coolest piece of memorabilia that I own?
Yes.
It's an award I got in 1988 when I won my first title. It was the Jersey Joe Walcott Award. Oh.
You still have it?
Yeah, I still got it, yeah.
Oh, that's cool. How about back when you would train and you had to cut weight, what was your first cheat meal after a fight? Fight's over, what's the one food you craved?
Big Mac.
Two more. Last show you binge watched?
TV show?
Yeah. Last show you put on, just sat down there and watched all night, got really into.
There's two of them. I can tell you right now.
Okay.
King of Queens.
Okay.
And Law and Order.
Great ones. How about this? One fighter you wish you could have fought in history?
Wish I could have fought in history.
Yes.
Wow. Damn. That's a good question. Because a lot of motherfuckers are like, I ain't fighting this motherfucker. No. You know, guys like Duran, all that. Guys are all to beat Duran. Fuck that. I ain't fighting that motherfucker. Hell no. But if I had to fight, see, a lot of these guys are so fucking good, man. But they wasn't good. They were great. If I could have someone that I would fight, you know what? I can tell you right now. A rematch with Meldrum Taylor.
That, you know, that's a great answer. That's a good answer.
Champ, that's the motherfucker I always wanted to rematch with. Buddy, I know he can't beat me.
No.
I know.
Buddy McGirt, I'm humbled to have interviewed you. Like I've said, so many fights I've watched and talked to my father about, and then when I knew I was going to interview you, I went back and watched so many of your fights. This was such an honor to have you on. So thank you, man. Plug the Instagram, because you're always posting on Instagram. And do you have any merch that you sell? Give me all the plugs. We can plug the shit out of it and let me know.
Well, you know, I have in my bio on Instagram, there's a link where you can buy Buddy McGirt shirts, sweatshirts. You know what I mean? The guy sells them.
And plug the Instagram, because you always update new stuff too.
What, Buddy McGirt Boxing?
Yes, sir. Buddy McGirt Boxing on Instagram. It's an awesome follow. Champ, this was nothing short of an honor, man. I hope you had fun. I will let you know when I'm going to drop this. We'll plug this. Hey, God bless you, man.
A big shout out to everyone in Brentwood.
Always, baby. Buddy, this was awesome, brother.
At the La Placita.
The historic location.
Okay.
Champ, I'll talk to you soon, brother.
Okay, take care, babe.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.